This week on Constructed Criticism, Spencer is joined by his new co-host, Manny and Matt, where they go deep into the modern metagame and how it compares to Legacy during their power ranking segment. They also have a training grounds on building your gauntlet around the levels that you can have in a Magic metagame environment, such as level 0, level 1, and level 2. Enjoy the show this week and let us know what you think. Like every week, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, the return of the Witch Kling, Matthew Kling.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And the loud opinionated guy that swore on the last podcast, Manny Rez.
Hi, guys, how's it going?
Dude, what is up?
You know, I don't really think that constitutes as a swear. It was really like slang.
I mean, we got people talking about it, man.
Oh, did we?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, to be fair, though, like, since episode about 3, we've done a very good job of editing out everything. Mm-hmm. And last week, I missed the part that I specifically told you not to say on the podcast, and it stayed in there. So people were talking.
Oh, yikes. Ooh, I'll watch myself.
No, it's all good, man. Like, sometimes things slip by, and, like, that's okay. I think we run a tight ship, and I'm not too worried about it. How are you doing, Matt Kling?
Doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. I heard you played Legacy today.
I did play some Legacy today.
That makes you love Magic again.
That certainly does. If I'm ever in need of a pick-me-up as far as Magic goes, I just play some Legacy, and then I feel great.
Alrighty. Well, let's talk about our sponsor really quick. You can buy all of your Legacy cards there at Oasis Games. You can check them out at OasisGamesSLC.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. That's like, if you're buying a Legacy deck, Matt, that's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely. I mean, yeah. It's a good percentage regardless, but yeah, the more you put on there, the higher the actual amount gets.
Yeah, and if you just want to just buy cards at Oasis Games, you can use this code WouldThatBeGood, no spaces, at checkout to get 5% off every order. This is a pretty big deal. Like, it lets you basically be competitive with every store. I do think Oasis is already competitive, but I think that 5% actually just puts it at, like, the best thing that you can be doing as far as buying Magic cards goes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think I've bought a Magic card anywhere else in the last 2 years.
It might be longer than that for me.
I have legitimately not bought a Magic card anywhere else since they opened. So
yeah, it's just not like worth it to me usually. If you haven't checked them out, check them out. OasisGamesSLC.com. They're great. They're obviously like paying us to do this podcast, and that's pretty cool. My Magic collection is 100% built off of Oasis Games money, being between winning their tournaments and them sponsoring my podcast. And that's pretty cool, and it's really helpful for me and these guys if you shop there. If you want to support this podcast directly and you are in the market for Magic cards, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. There's all new Patreon goals. We're going to be starting the Google Hangouts again as soon as we meet that threshold. Streams or video content, whichever we're going to find easier, that will start up again. There are definitely things that we're doing. We're getting about, like, a Patreon and a half per month. That's a great rate as far as, like, I mean, an extra $15 every month is going to build up eventually. But if you haven't checked it out, check it out. If you feel like we're worth what you're getting from your Netflix account, I mean, we feel like we're worth that. So if you have the chance to donate any amount, you can. It starts at $1 and goes to any amount you want. You can be 1 to a million. Like, whatever you feel like we deserve is totally fine. And these guys are laughing, but, like, that's what it is. It's whatever you guys feel like is worth it, starting at $1. Yeah, so let's get into this. So hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We started hashtag always improving after I started at my job, which really hit this home for me. And I knew that that's something that I believed in for a long time. But I wanted to incorporate this into the podcast and, like, show that Matt, Manny, and I, Casey, and Quentin, like, all of us, our goal is always to get better at Magic. We're never our best because we can always be better. And that's what hashtag always improving is about. So, Manny, how did you improve at Magic this week?
This week, I got out of my comfort zone a little bit, and I played the Obzon Retreat control deck at this Wednesday Magic last week. And, you know, I played much, much better than I did. You know, I remembered my triggers. I tried to create a uniform, you know, feel that I do everything the same way at the same time. And just, I felt like my playing just got so, so, so much better and so much tighter.
That's good. Like, I feel like a lot of people undervalue a uniform field and doing things the same way. Matt and I will attest that it just takes a lot less mental energy when you do that, right? Well, right, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny because you think that, like, just play my cards, it's whatever. But actually, like, having an exercise that you've gone through 1,000 times means that you don't have to go through that exercise every time you do it.
Right, yeah. I mean, you can establish shortcuts in your own mind of how to do things once you've done them enough times. It can be a trap as well, but most of the time, if you have something down well enough, like, and you're just able to shortcut it, it's just going to save you more mental capacity to focus on the things that matter.
Yeah, it's your job to notice when something that you're doing needs to be changed. But if you can shortcut it, it's usually just better.
Absolutely. How did you guys improve this week?
Yeah, Matt, what'd you do?
I think so. I've been having a problem making Magic fun lately. And so I did a couple things this weekend just to try to make Magic a little bit more fun for me. Just because I do play so much Magic, and it's easy to get burned out when you play that much. So I just did a few things. Like, for instance, before the RPTQ that we just attended this weekend.
I wish people could see me shaking my head right now.
Oh. So anyway, we had myself and two other people randomly pick decks for the RPTQ. Essentially, like, we all brought a deck. And then we, like, did a deck swap before the tournament just to, you know, add a little variance into our lives. Which, while not recommended if you're just trying to win the tournament, it is a good way to make the tournament more fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not, like, your ideal thing going into the RPTQ. Funnily enough, though, you all ended up on the decks you wanted to play.
Kind of. I mean, I think Alex and I both really wanted to play the Goryeo's Vengeance deck.
Not enough to get 2 copies.
Yeah, I think he was just being lazy and didn't want to get 2 copies, so then he ended up building Burn, and then we did the swap thing, and I ended up getting Burn. But
sure. So for me, the thing that I did better to get better at Magic this week is I actually played some Magic. So I'm ending my hiatus. I have been about for 2 months kind of on a break from Magic, and at the RPTQ I realized how much it was hurting me. Just making sloppy plays, playing my counter spells out of order, not resolving my spells correctly. I was really rusty, and so I have just decided, and talking to my wife is perfectly okay with me just ending it and just starting to play Magic again. Like, it's more upsetting to me when I'm doing things poorly because I'm sloppy than if I just play Magic and, like, find other times to hang out with my wife. So she actually was really supportive. I told her what happened. She's like, so I assume you're going to start playing Magic. And I was like, yeah, I'd like to do that. She's like, yeah, that's fine. Like, we can, you know, I love you. Like, we can spend time together when we can. And it was really cool. So I'm going to start playing competitive RL Magic again. So.
Real quick, why don't you guys recap for us what happened at the RPTQ this weekend?
I mean, so I took 11th. Off of tiebreakers, 1x2 got in. I took 11th, so I was 3 spots out, which is actually great. My tiebreakers actually improved a lot over the last 2 rounds, but it just I couldn't overcome the round one loss. And obviously, both of my losses came with major mistakes by me, playing my counterspells in the wrong order, and then actually in game 3 resolving an escape shift incorrectly.
What?
So. Yeah, it's just very big mental mistakes by me. And so honestly, like, if I had just been playing a lot of Magic, I do believe that I top 8 that and give myself a chance to qualify for the Pro Tour again. So I had a rough weekend because I put myself in a bad position, which is better than, like, variance, in my opinion, because it's something that I can correct. But I do feel like I squandered a chance to get back on the Pro Tour.
Gotcha. I mean, I think that's a pretty valuable lesson. I mean, you're going to get back in it.
And then, I think, Matt, you just, like, didn't want to be there anyway.
I don't really care for the modern format as much right now. And I just had a lot going on. I guess I just didn't really want to be there as much. But I mean,
playing Burn must have been perfect then.
It was okay. I lost a lot of matches of Magic though that day.
Well, let's talk about Modern. So this week on our Power Rankings, we had to talk about Matt's least favorite format, and that's Modern. I want to start this. So we have our top five decks like we do every week on Power Rankings. So the way that works is we take a certain percentage of the decks over the last couple weeks. This time we took the GP and the SCG Open this week, the last two Super IQs. So the way that it works is we take all the information that's available to us down to top 32. So a top 32 gets 1 point, a top 16 gets 2 points, a top 8 gets 3 points, a top 4 gets 4 points, a second gets 5 points, and a first gets 6 points. And then we rank the decks according to that, those finishes. We don't do this in split format events. Usually if there's a split format event, we actually just try and not do the power rankings of that week because it's not as valuable of information. But this week, I want to talk about something. So before we get started, we do have some honorable mention decks that I'd like to just touch on. But there were 23 different decks in 4 events that got points. What do you think about that, Manny?
I mean, I think that's pretty indicative of how Modern goes, right? You never have one deck just completely dominating the format. There's so many different cards. The format's so huge. Like, I feel like there's always room for a lot of decks to do different things on a different day.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's just really no deck that's enough better than any of the others to really push it over the top, so you're basically okay playing whatever you like, which is basically why we were able to do the deck swapping thing that we did before the RPTQ. Like, we wouldn't have done that in a standard format or anything like that, I don't think, because we would have all been pretty confident in what our deck choices were, but it feels like in Modern a lot of times it doesn't really matter as much what deck you pick as how well you play and kind of hitting the right matchups.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that 23 decks is indicative of actually just a format where I think the pros are right. I think that this is a bad format to have be a Pro Tour or an RPTQ format because, like, you just can't predict it.
It's incredibly hard to metagame, so people end up just playing the Rock decks and stuff at the Pro Tour because they know they'll have a 50-50 matchup or so against basically everything.
Right, so it's funny because, like, when we look at these power rankings, you're going to be like, oh, no, these two decks are great, or this one deck is great, and it's like, well, not really. Like, it was great because people were playing it these last couple weeks, but that's not indicative of what the format represents, which is actually just a wide-open field. I mean, almost any of these 23 decks that scored points could win any given Modern event.
Right.
And that's great as far as a format where people can build whatever they want and they can play the decks they want, but it's not great as far as, like, what Matt and I might be concerned about, which is qualifying and then competing at the Pro Tour level.
It's certainly great for casual play. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun. The format's going to be, you know, very diverse, and if you're playing at your local tournament, you know, you could play, like, against a variety of different decks, assuming that everybody has the money to build more than one deck. But yeah, it's just going to be impossible to metagame against, and that's just not really something that I think is good for the competitive scene.
Yeah, so let's talk about these honorable mentions really quick. We have 3 honorable mentions. We're not going to talk too much about them, but I just want to let people know that these decks still did well. And that's so one of them is Scapeshift with 9 points. This deck had 5 finishes, so it had a lot of finishes in the points. which is why it's on the honorable mentions. This is actually the highest win percentage deck on MTGO right now. I think that this deck is gaining momentum, and I think people are figuring out that how to build the Bring to Light versions, which is why this deck is picking up steam.
Matt? Yeah, it certainly picked up a lot of popularity after after Battle for Zendikar came out, so I definitely think it is a lot to do with the fact that people are figuring out the Bring to Light versions exactly. I think that basically the deck really has a lot of good matchups, but it suffers from the fact that its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness in that it's a one-card combo deck. So you only need to draw Scapeshift to win basically every game, but you also have to draw Scapeshift to win basically every game.
Right, and Bring to Light is a great thing to fix that problem.
Exactly. It's like when Dig Through Time was in the format. Like, it gave you so much redundancy that, like, Scapeshift all of a sudden became, like, tier one and probably the best deck in the format at the time.
Yeah, so, and which was very unknown to people because Dig Through Time had such a short life. People didn't even realize that, like, Dig Through Time might actually be better than these Treasure Cruise decks.
Right.
So I'm pretty familiar with Scapeshift before. Is it with this new incarnation? Is it just playing four Bring to Lights and like a Hollowed Fountain?
No, it's playing all five colors.
They mostly play five colors. I don't know that you need to play five colors though.
I think that you only need to play four. I don't know that you need to play black at all. I think you can just play white, play like Supreme Verdict and like some sweet spells.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not 100% sure whether white or black is actually better though. It's a toss-up. I mean, you certainly gain some things from black. You could gain Hand Disruption, which is pretty good at pushing through combos if we've learned anything from, like, Storm and Legacy.
Yeah, and even Grixis Twin.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? It looks like that is what this person has done. They're playing four colors, no white.
I've seen every version. I've seen the Damnation version. I've seen the Supreme Verdict. I've seen the Wrath of God version.
Right.
I've seen all of it. As far as this deck is concerned, I feel like it's still trying to figure out its identity. But it's not on our top five, so let's go on to Twin. So Twin actually had 11 points between its finish, and it only had three finishes, with one of them being a win, which pushed it pretty high up there. Twin falling out, what do you think that is about, Matt?
It really fell out pretty rapidly, too. As far as what the reason is, I think that your matchups against Burn just aren't great. So with more people playing Burn, it gets worse.
I think the uptick in Scapeshift, Jund, and Burn is what did it in.
Right.
I think that none of those matchups are great for you, and those are all upticks. Like, people are playing a lot more of all three of those decks.
Yeah. The meta has just shifted in such a way to beat Twin. And it's kind of because Twin was perceived as the best deck for a while, you know? So, contrary to what we were saying before, like, people are metagaming for the format, like, they are trying to beat Twin, but as you can see, it's kind of not working out because now Twin just is nowhere to be found, so there's no reason to metagame against it, so the power rankings could be completely different in 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Next up, coming in with another honorable mention is actually the green-red aggro decks. These are the Gore Clan Rampager, Burning Tree Emissary, Tarka's Command, Tarmogoyf decks with, like, a little bit of Wild Mikado, but they're not actually playing white spells.
So, I'm not sure how fair it is to actually not refer to this as just a Zoo deck. They're almost exactly the same. Path to Exile, right? Like,
sure, I do believe that this deck is inherently different because it literally does not play white spells.
I don't know. I don't think Zoo it necessarily means white spells. I think it just is like an aggressive creature deck with lightning bolts. Yeah, basically,
cats,
I think
cats and apes and.
I think if you're playing Wild Mikado, it's pretty close to Zoo as long as your curve is aggressive.
So this deck had no finishes outside of two wins, though.
Yeah, that's not quite true, is it? I thought it had a top 32 somewhere.
No, it has so green red aggro, and one of them actually doesn't play Wild Mikado. It just had two finishes. It actually ties our fifth place deck. But I made it in the honorable mention because of how many more finishes our number five deck, which is Tron, had. Tron coming in at number five, is this indicative of Abzan and Jund and Zoo being more popular? Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the more the blue decks get pushed out of the format, the better Tron's going to do. Tron has a really hard time beating a Remand specifically, especially if it's backed up by any kind of a clock. So things like Delver or even the Grixis control decks that could land an early Tasigur had pretty reasonable Tron matchups, as well as the like hyper fast combo decks like Infect or anything like that.
Or basically any combo deck playing Remand, right? Like even Twin, Infect, and Scape Shift all have great Tron matchups.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You can't play just a straight control deck and hope to beat Tron just because they will eventually just cast an Emrakul and you'll lose. But if you can play some amount of permission and a clock, that's really what's going to beat Tron. And these decks that are winning right now are not playing hand permission. They're playing a lot of like hand disruption and permission through like the board, like trying to play to the board as opposed to playing to the stack.
Right.
And that's just not a recipe to beat Tron, so that is what I believe is leading to the success of Tron right now.
Yeah, and which is funny, because like at the RPTQ, there was only one Tron player in the whole room, and he did very badly. I do think that that's indicative of how much Grixis Twin there was in the room. I believe it was the most popular deck at RPTQ. At RRPTQ. But I think that Tron... I think it holds a special place in this format. I think that Tron is here to stay literally forever. And I do believe it actually holds a great place. I think that Tron keeps certain things honest in the format, and I'm very happy that it's in modern, in all honesty. Manny, what are your thoughts on this?
So why do you feel that having a deck like Tron in the format keeps it honest?
Well, so if, like, Tron didn't exist, can you imagine how unfair things like Jundin Zoo would be for the format?
I mean, it's not... Is it the only spell that's playing things like Pyroclasm? I mean...
Well, Pyroclasm certainly isn't good against Jund, right? It might not even be that great against Zoo. The thing is that, like, the things like Ugin and
Karn Liberated and...
Karn, thank you.
Warm Coil Engine and...
Yeah. Those things are very good against those style of decks, and you can build your Naya and your Jund and your Abzan decks to be good in a lot of different formats, but none of that includes being good against this style of deck.
Okay.
You can even build your Jund deck. If you really wanted to, you could probably build a Jund deck to be Amulet Bloom. That's probably something you could do if you wanted to.
I'm sure you could build a Jund deck to beat Green Red Tron too. You probably just would beat almost nothing else, right? Like,
right. Well, sure.
It wouldn't be a practical version of Jund. You know, it'd
right.
be like four Fulminator Mages and like a bunch of Stone Rains.
But
and
that's
like...
the same reason that things like Amulet. I don't think Amulet is this in the same category because I don't think that Amulet should exist. It is unfair. Whereas Tron is a fair deck.
So I think that they both really encompass the same thing. They both have all 90-10 matchups. The only difference is that the green-red Tron deck, it actually matters what matchup you're playing against, whereas the Amulet deck, it matters on which percentage of your deck you draw.
Exactly, and that's I completely agree. And I think that's why Amulet and Grixis Shoal shouldn't be in the format, because it really, what your opponent does doesn't really matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, people, I've played Grixis Brand a lot, and people always ask me what my bad matchups are with the deck. And the honest answer is there aren't any. If you just have it, your opponent can't win.
Yeah. I actually feel that way with Scape Shift sometimes, with the exception of bad decks. Like, you actually can't beat a bad deck.
that may be true, but, like, Gory's Vengeance literally is
right.
is the deck that if you have all of it, nobody can win.
Right. I think the same thing is true for Amulet Bloom. Like, there's just not, like... Unless they're on the play and they thought seize you, it's usually pretty bad for them.
Right.
I think the same thing is true of Grixis Shoal, right? Like, unless you get thought seize clocked, like, you're probably going to win every game if you're drawing the right part of your deck.
Yeah, unless you're just drawing poorly, yeah, then...
Yeah. But I do think that Tron occupies an important space, and it also did fairly well with four finishes, putting it at 12 points, none of them being wins. Like, it actually had great performances.
Yeah, it's been fairly consistent. That's true.
Coming in at number four, we have Affinity with 15 points. Honestly, this deck is just around for... It's going to be around forever. It is the level zero of Modern. You need to be able to beat this deck if you're going to play Modern.
Well, so the interesting part about that is that I actually think that this deck is the worst matchup for the deck that we have in our number one spot, so I don't know if that's necessarily true.
But some people in the number one spot disagree with you, Matt.
I mean, the results agree with me. I mean, like, I'm just saying, hard data, like, hard data does lie. Like, anybody that says it doesn't is crazy. Like, you can make data say just about anything you want it to, but, like, literally, in tournament performance, our number one deck beats Affinity more than, Affinity beats our number one deck more than our number one deck beats Affinity.
Yeah, Manny, absolutely. I played Burn for a long time.
Manny, you're ruining things.
What did I do?
You're not supposed to say the names of the decks, noob.
Oh. I didn't know that.
It's okay. I do think that Affinity occupies an important space because it gives the format an aggro deck that attacks from different angles. And I think that that also is something great about Modern. And the only problem that I have with Affinity is that it does require specific cards in your sideboard to beat if you want to beat it.
Yeah,
and that occupies like some space in your sideboard that you could occupy for other matchups if it didn't exist, which could make Modern better, but also worse because Affinity doesn't kill the combo decks as fast.
I mean, I'm pretty okay with paying a sideboard tax. You know, being an avid Legacy player, like you have a rather large sideboard tax actually. Like you have taxes against a variety of things.
Sure.
I mean, you like realistically when you're playing Legacy, you know. You start out with like an 11-card sideboard that really is only like a 7-card sideboard in the end of the day, but
yeah, you're talking about like combo decks.
Yeah, you basically need like, you know, two to three pieces of graveyard disruption if you're running lean on graveyard hate, and then you know you need some amount of like combo disruption as well.
Yeah,
but
and I think that Affinity occupies a similar space in Modern that I personally am okay with, but I know some pros actually aren't.
Yeah, I can see that. The one thing I do like about Affinity, though, is that Affinity actually tends to evolve from time to time, which I like about it. I think that there's more than one way to build an Affinity deck, and sometimes they can look very different, and I like that factor about it. Like, you don't often see, like, something like Jund or Abzan just randomly change the entire dynamic of the way that it looks and plays, whereas every once in a while Affinity gets a card where they kind of just go off the chart with it, like
sure,
you know, you've seen the Hangerback Walker versions that run like Arcbound Worker and things like that to try to really abuse it.
Yeah,
whether that's better or worse than the original Affinity deck is you know unclear.
I mean, even the 2-mana make a 5/5. What is that card called?
Yeah, the Ensoul Artifact. That was a big thing for a while as well.
Yeah,
and then they had the Blast from the Past version that won some major event maybe like a year ago where he was running like 4 Frogmites and 4 Mirror Enforcers. And yeah.
Yeah, the deck certainly can evolve. I agree with Matt on that. Let's go to our number 3 deck. This is Jund/Abzan. Matt, why do we include these decks together?
They're both basically black-green Liliana decks. The white and the red are basically your splash colors. You're really just playing a rock deck, so to speak.
Yeah, you're playing white to beat the mirror if you think that you're going to play against a lot of... If you're going to play against a lot of Jund decks, you'd rather be playing Siege Rhino and Lingering Souls. But if you're going to play against a lot of the field, you'd much rather play Lightning Bolt, Colgan's Command, and other things, right, Matt?
That's true in some senses, although you'd also rather be playing Abzan against Burn.
Sure.
Not only because of Siege Rhino, but some of the Abzan decks will run Phyrexian Unlife in the board, and that card is insane against Burn.
Yeah, gain 10 life for cheap is pretty good.
Yeah, and, like, it can't be Skullcracked, which is the best part of it, right? Like,
yeah.
And Kitchen Finks sometimes is pretty good in the board, too.
But I think both decks can occupy that space.
Yeah, both decks can run Kitchen Finks as well.
Honestly, I think this deck, as much as people hate it, I think that it also is a deck that I appreciate in the format.
Yeah, I think that this deck actually is something I'm more appreciative than something like Tron. I think that, and I say this as a combo player too, I think that it is important to have a deck that is, like, mostly good against combo in order to keep the format semi-honest, because even combo players don't want to play combo mirrors all day. You know, like, if you're playing combo, you really want to play the games where you're playing against the fair decks, and it's kind of like this, you know, mental puzzle game where you're trying to figure out how to win and they're trying to figure out how to beat you. And
yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. Manny, what do you think? As somebody who's a little bit newer to Modern, what do you think when you sit down against an Abzan or Gen deck?
Honestly, I've mostly been on the other side. I've played some Jund and Abzan. I love it. I mean, I really like it a lot. The good matchups are great. The not so great matchups still feel winnable, except for Burn. That's a nightmare.
Welcome to Rock Decks. And actually, Matt, you said something interesting. That who was it that said that Burn was actually just still 50-50?
It was Patrick Sullivan, actually.
Yeah. Basically, I do think that basically you don't have anything over 55% with Jund except for maybe Splinter Twin.
Yeah, and even that one's not much over 55, right? Like,
right. It could be like a 60-40 matchup.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that having that deck is important in a format. We saw that with in Legacy for a long time, I believe, with the Stoneforge Mystic, Thalia, Mother of Ruins, green decks, the Maverick decks, right? Those Maverick decks for a long time occupied that space that eventually Jund took over, and then Jund... what happened to Jund in Legacy?
I don't know. It's unclear. I mean, we have Legacy tournaments at Oasis every once in a while, and Jund seems to do reasonably well in the hands of capable players. I think that there was a long time when Jund was basically unplayable due to Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time.
Sure.
But since then, I really think that Jund is a deck that people should really be looking hard at.
Yeah, I do think that, like, junk decks, you know, junk bears for a long time occupied this space in Legacy. Jund has occupied this space multiple times in Standard, and I think that it's an important thing. It is an important thing to have. There's a lot of players that really hate mid-range decks, and specifically this style of mid-range deck. But if you don't have this, things can literally get out of control. So. Coming in at number two, we have Zudex. This is something that, Matt, I think that you and I wanted to talk about a little bit, and that's just, like, how different some of these Naya decks look that are being categorized as Naya Company and Zoo.
Yeah, and I actually think that it is appropriate to differentiate these two decks. Naya Company is much more of a mid-range aggro deck, whereas Zoo is just an aggro deck, and sometimes an aggro combo deck with things like Boros Charm and Gorklan Rampager, but...
Yeah, I mean, they can be very different. The thing that kept them together for me when I was doing the power rankings is how many of the Zoo decks actually just still play Collected Company.
Oh, that's interesting to know. I didn't realize that there were that many Zoo decks playing Collected Company right now.
Yeah, there were decks playing Gorklan Rampager and Collected Company in the same deck. Which is, like, why I was like, you know what, I'm not going to blur the lines here. I'm not going to pull the Abzan control thing here. They're pretty close enough to the same deck for me to put them together. But I do think it's important to note that, like, some of these decks are Knight of the Reliquary decks. And some of them are just Wild Nacondal decks that are playing Collected Company to gain card advantage. And that's a big difference.
Well, so I just think that they play out so differently, and they have such different matchups that I wouldn't lump them together. Like, most Zoo decks, it's really rare that a Zoo deck will actually play, like, Noble Hierarch or anything like that. And the Naya Company decks are actually trying to go a little bit later in the game. They're trying to grind you out with these advantages, whereas the Zoo decks are just trying to grind you to death.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, these Naya decks at large are making up 20 points of the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, Naya seems to be doing quite well in this format. Wild Nacondal is alive and well.
I think that is because of how good Naya is specifically against... I actually don't think it's that great against Abzan, but I do think it's that great against Jund. And Jund had the highest win percentage going into day two of the GP this weekend. It didn't actually put anything into the top eight, but it actually was the largest percent of the day two metagame.
The deck gets better the more people play Kolo against Command, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that, like, you're much better off if people are playing Jund. I don't know that it transfers over into the Abzan world, but I do think that if your matchup, like, I do think that it's the same thing as Standard back in the day. I think that your Naya deck is built to prey upon these Jund decks.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the only thing that might put it in favor of Abzan is specifically Siege Rhino. Like, having something
right.
that large.
A 4-5 is a big thing, right?
Right. I mean, and they already have that in the form of Tarmogoyfs, but just having 8 4/5s instead of 4 4/5s is going to be something that's certainly liable to swing a matchup.
And a lot of these Avs and decks are still playing like one or two Tacitors too, so it's even
right. It's even more 4/5s than that. Just all the 4/5s, really.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to play Abzan when Modern comes back. You guys, I'm so sold. I want to play that many 4/5s. That sounds so fun.
I want to play all the 4/5s. Well, spoil the number one deck. Manny already spoiled it. But it is Burn with 33 points. Matt, is Burn actually this good in this format?
You know, I don't actually think it is just that good. I think that it's something that a lot of people just pick up and play. I definitely think it's a good deck. I think it should be in the top five somewhere, but our power rankings show it being almost twice as good as the next best deck, and I just don't think that that's true.
I also think that, like, people just, there's going to be times in a format where Burn excels because people are like, I don't really need to worry about Burn right now, and then all of a sudden Burn's like, oh, just kidding, you did need to worry about me. And this is one of those moments where, like, we see less Feed the Clans, we see less Phyrexian Lives, we see less of everything that beats this deck, less Kitchen Things, less everything, and less Wormcoil Engine even. Like, there's just things that aren't being played that, like, Burn's like, well, if you're not going to play this, like, you're just going to lose to me. Congratulations, like, why are you being so dumb? And that is, in fact, a good thing to have. Burn represents that same thing in Legacy. Like, can you imagine if Burn didn't exist in Legacy where things like Charlotte's Bug would beam at?
Well, I think that there was actually a good percentage of the time that in Legacy where Burn wasn't a real deck. It's actually only been since Eidolon of the Great Revels was printed that Burn has been a real deck. It was kind of a joke before that.
I mean, it's it's a real deck now.
Absolutely. I mean, Burn is a great deck in Legacy right now. I don't think that that's necessarily the only thing holding Shardless Bug from being oppressive, though.
I mean, I don't think that a deck like Shardless Bug or Jund can be oppressive. Because that's the space that Shardless Bug occupies. And by the way, Matt, why are we comparing Modern to Legacy so much during these power rankings?
The reason is because there is a strong correlation due to the fact that there are actual combo decks in Modern. So in a perfect world, there's a rock, paper, scissors between types of decks. There is the combo decks that are preying on the aggro decks that prey on the control decks, and then the control decks that prey on the combo decks, and then the mid-range decks kind of fall somewhere in between where they play the control role sometimes, the aggro role sometimes.
Yeah, and that's the perfect world. That's what we want Magic to be. And Legacy has actually achieved that. Legacy actually exists in that world. And we want Modern to, we all want Modern to exist in that world.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd be crazy to want Modern to be worse than Legacy. Because why wouldn't we want Modern to be as sweet as Legacy? Legacy is amazing. And it's important to note the things that are happening in Modern that correlate to Legacy. Because, like, things that happen in Legacy do impact Modern. In fact, Modern has impacted Legacy at times, where, like, the Deathrite Shaman Bloodrite Elf decks, those got out of hand in Modern, and people were like, wait a second, I can actually do this in Legacy way better. And those decks actually just became the best deck in Legacy for a little while.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's actually happened on multiple occasions where we've drawn decks specifically out of, you know, either... It's more rare that they get drawn straight out of Standard, but, like, out of Modern and Extended happened all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it did happen out of Standard, right? Like, Stoneforge Mystic, for
example. Yeah, yes. So, like, it was a very quick sequence, right? Like, so, Cobblade was invented in Standard, then it moved to Extended, like, a week later, and then instantly moved to Legacy.
Yeah, and took over the format. The week that it happened in Legacy, I believe that Jerry Thompson and, it was another Flores. What was his name?
No, it was it. Edgar Flores.
Edgar Flores. Jerry Thompson, Edgar Flores, first and seconded with Stoneforge Mystic like 2 weeks after Pro Tour Paris.
Right.
And didn't the same thing happen with Delver?
Well, Delver was actually good in Legacy, I think, before it was good in Standard.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's true.
I don't remember, but I know that I known people that were big Legacy aficionados that first saw Delver printed and were like, well, this card's completely busted in Legacy and we should all be playing it.
Yeah. It's certainly great when you can have such correlations between formats. And Burn occupying, I mean, if you were to occupy the total percentage of points in this form, in this power rankings, it would be a larger percent than you would think Burn would take up. And that is inherent of, like, what Matt was talking about in these sideboard taxes, is that they were cutting. They were like, I don't really need to worry about Burn right now. Like, other people are going to hate it out. And the same thing can happen with things like Dredge, Reanimator, and Legacy, right?
Well, and I think it's also important to remember that whenever you try to make a sideboard card multi-purpose, you do gain more, like, effectively more sideboard slots that way, but you also make the card worse in both matchups. So, for instance, I'm looking at an Obzon deck right now that it's quote-unquote Burn Hate would be one Timely Reinforcements and two Obstinate Baloths. And honestly, that's just not going to get it done most of the times against a real good, like a real Burn hand.
Because they're going to kill you first before you get to that Obstinate Baloth.
Yeah, or they're just going to be able to wait until turn four to Skullcrack you. Like, you need to really put the pressure on them to have the Skullcrack very early and to not be able to tap out, right? Like, with things like Feed the Clan being an instant and to only two mana, like, the Burn player is going to have to tap out to cast spells at some point, right? So you're easily going to be able to cast a Feed the Clan when they're casting, like, their
Bolt.
Yeah, their Bolt or their Searing Blaze or whatever. You know, it's easy to play that around them holding up two mana. Whereas it's not easy to cast an Obstinate Baloth around them casting or having two mana. You're just going to have to play it on turn four no matter what.
Manny, where are you at in Modern? Like, as somebody who's right now grinding PPTQs trying to get to the RPTQ, where are you at when you're thinking of, like, what am I going to do in Modern?
So one of the things I was doing when it was the last Modern PPTQ season was just trying to play as many decks as I could to see what I was going to like to play the most, what I was going to have the best results with, and what I could practice with in future events. I think Modern is one of those kind of formats where it rewards players for learning a deck as well as they can in and out. So I kind of took you as an example for this, where Scapeshift has, I mean, back when you were crushing with it, didn't have always the best results. It had some really bad matchups. But you know, I remember you'd sit down with an Affinity player and be like, oh man, this is the worst. Like, I'm about to get crushed. And, you know, I'd see you pull it out because you were so familiar with that deck. You played it so many times. You knew what to do with it. And I figured that was the way that I wanted to learn to play that format.
Yeah, I think that Modern does does. So one of the decks I think that had it had two total four finishes, and that's actually Geist Jeskai. I don't actually think that deck is at all good in Modern. But I think that people play that deck so much, and they've been playing it for so long, that it puts up results when you look at a four-week period. That deck had 5 points, two finishes, top 16 and a top or top 32 and a top 8. I think that's 100% predicated upon that exact idea. Matt, would you play that deck right now?
No, I personally would not. No, I.
But if you'd played it 1,000 times, would you consider it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that any deck that I don't even know that that's just a Modern specific thing. You see players that can make miracles happen all the time with decks that they just know inside and out. I mean, John Finkel has brought back Storm in Modern so many times that it's unbelievable. You know, half that deck is banned just because of him.
I think that that's a great place to be at. Is, you know, I saw players playing decks that I'm like, oh, man, I would never play that. But at the same time, like, if you've been playing that since day one of Modern, you actually might just be having an unfair advantage even. Because so many people have to switch decks because their decks get banned in Modern. Modern is the format where things get banned the most, things change the most. Because Wizards wants it to shake up. They want to create the next Legacy. And they know that aggressive bannings is going to be the way to do that eventually. It's not working right now. Like, Modern is not the pro's favorite format, whereas Legacy might be everyone's favorite format if they played it.
Yeah, I don't know very many people that have played Legacy that it's not, like, at least, you know, one of their favorite formats.
And that's okay. I do believe that there have been times where Modern's been the best format, and then things get printed, and they're like, oh, man, we messed up. like, we messed up Modern, we need to change this, but their changes don't affect Modern the way they want. Other decks have, like, evolved, so, like, things have to go back to normal, and it's hard. It's hard for things to happen. There are unbannings, there are bannings, there are things that need to happen. But that being said, I think that in the end, Modern will one day be great. And
so, what I find really interesting about that whole premise is that I think most of the times that Modern has been the best format has been literally right before a banning.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's my own personal thing, but I actually think that the Treasure Cruise Birthing Pod banning, right before that, Modern was actually my favorite format. And that's saying a lot, because I love Legacy.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun playing Modern right before that. Like, playing Burn Splash Treasure Cruise was insane. It was so much fun.
I actually wonder if they had not banned Birthing Pod and Dig Through Time, if they only banned Treasure Cruise, if Modern would still be the best format.
It's, yeah, I think that would have been a better, at the very least. I think Dig Through Time gives the blue decks enough to, like, kind of get going, and I think
Or at least unban Ancestral Visions if they're not going to do that.
Sure, yeah. You deal with a lot of Cascade nonsense, though, with Ancestral Visions, which is...
Yeah, but they don't have Bloodbraid Elf or...
Oh, that's true, yeah. The Bloodbraid Elf is banned, so yeah. Maybe you wouldn't deal with any Cascade nonsense, because all the Cascade cards are, like, basically unplayable.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly not going to, like, Violent Outburst or whatever the card is called into.
Yeah.
But no, I think that Wizards is legitimately trying to create a great format. And I think that patience will be a virtue in this, because I personally do enjoy Modern. There are times where it's terrible. Times like right now. Right now, I do believe Modern is terrible. I think that there are too many decks to create your deck the right way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's just no way to make a successful control deck in this format, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's a problem. Like, whether your control deck is Scapeshift, whether it's Blue, White, Red, whether it's Grixis, like, it's probably not going to happen. Which is a problem, but I do believe that Wizards is on the right track with this format. Aggressive bannings, I do believe, is the way to create it, so let's just be patient with it. Yeah, that's all I really have to say about Modern, and I think these power rankings are great. I think that it is still great. I think that if we did this with Legacy, there would be probably not 23 different decks, but something like 17 or 15.
I'm not sure. There could even actually be more different decks, but a lot of them fall into the same basic trends, and the answers are so much more generic is actually the thing that really makes that's what really ties Legacy together, is that Swords to Plowshares is good against every deck with creatures in it, and like
right.
Force of Will is good against like every deck that's trying to do something unfair, like, or has powerful spells in it in general.
Yeah, if you're willing to take two
scissors,
for one
rock paper scissors.
Yeah, so stay tuned, guys. I think that Legacy is still great. I enjoyed this
power means Modern
Thank you, Matt. I do mean Modern. I think that Modern is still going to be great. You know, stay tuned, because, like, I do believe there's a banning coming.
I agree. I've loved Modern many points in the format's life, so I have faith that they will get somewhere again. And they actually have been saving the bannings for the Modern Pro Tour, so I'm sure that with, you know, Modern Pro Tour is going to be
it's
relatively
Atlanta.
Soon, right? Yeah. So yeah. Okay. Atlanta's Modern, so we'll have bannings very soon, and hopefully some sweet unbannings. More to the point.
So let's move on to our training grounds. So every week we go over something that's going to make you better at Magic, Matt. What is the training grounds about?
So the training grounds is basically our way of addressing a topic that we feel like will benefit the community as a whole.
Yeah. So like anything that we feel like is in-depth enough to do, like, a 20-minute conversation about. So it's basically, like, our spoken article, if you will. This week, we want to talk about building a gauntlet. I went through every episode of Constructive Criticism, couldn't actually find a Building the Gauntlet episode. Really surprising. I'm sure we did one between episodes 1 and 4, where, like, they're just lost to us. But we're going to go deep into this time. And I'd like to start with Matt. Matt, what is a gauntlet?
So a gauntlet is essentially the decks that you expect everybody to play, the decks that you want to test against. They're going to be the decks that basically when you run a deck through the gauntlet, you're going to play a deck against, like, usually between 4 and 5 decks or so that you're going to just expect to see a lot of at a tournament. Similar to our power rankings, honestly. Like, if you took our power rankings and then just built all those decks and then we're playing all the other decks against those, that would be your gauntlet.
Yeah, like, if you just took our power rankings to build your gauntlet, you'd probably have a pretty good gauntlet. Like, if you can beat the top five decks in our power rankings that we had that week, and you're like, oh my gosh, I have a good match against all these, you might have actually broken the format.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like, you might have invented Cobblade, so if that's your life, that's pretty good. What do you consider when you are going into a gauntlet for a different format, Matt? We talked about this before the podcast with Manny. Like, you don't necessarily need a good matchup against all five of your gauntlet decks, right?
Yeah, no, certainly not. I mean, you would ideally like to have a good matchup against more than half of the decks in the gauntlet. So, like, say your gauntlet is five decks, you would like to have a good matchup against three out of the five.
And then a reasonable matchup against a fourth.
Yeah, it's not even necessarily always necessary, though. Like, if you... There are certain formats where the number one deck, it makes up, you know, 35 to 40% of the metagame. And if you have a good matchup against that, and then, like, a reasonable matchup against the rest of the gauntlet, it's probably still going to be good.
Yeah. So Manny, when you're going into, like, a format that you're unfamiliar with, like a Legacy or something, like a Modern, like, is it different than the gauntlet that you might consider for a standard format?
Absolutely. So with the standard format, you know, let's say there's a decent amount of decks, but really there's usually, let's say, between three and four, like, tier one decks that are always crushing it at every event, and those are the ones you really need to worry about. Like, in this standard format, if you're testing a deck and it's not good against, like, Jeskai Black or Obzon, just stop playing, like, just stop worrying about it, stop thinking about it right there. As far as, like, Modern or Legacy, you know, you look at the most played decks, and they could be as highly played as maybe 10 or 11% on, like, Modo. And that's going to be more indicative of, you know, the kind of competition you're going to see.
Matt, what is it like? So something that we saw last year was there were two times, actually. There was right after Fate Reforge and right after Origins, where Green Red Devotion was the best deck. So when that happened, two things happened. The one of them was people who actually built their Green Red Devotion decks to beat the Green Red Devotion mirror, and then another time they actually just built decks that beat Green Red Devotion. So those are two very different things. So why do these two different things happen, and how is it affected from the way you build your gauntlet?
So I honestly think that these two things happen for different reasons. I think that it depends on the level of the event that you're going to. Like, if you're going to go to an SCG or, if you're going to your FNM for certainly, you really want to just be... I mean, if you're going to your FNM, you probably want to just play the best deck. Okay. Or just whatever you're going to have the most fun with, depending on what your goals are for this particular FNM. If you're going to go to an SCG, you really want to play a deck that's going to beat the best deck. 1 second, sorry. Whereas if you're going to a Pro Tour, the formula that people have adopted is to take the best deck, figure out what decks beat that deck, and then figure out the decks that beat those decks, because they assume that most people will figure out how to beat the best deck.
Yeah, I mean, let's take, for example, like, Matt,
so,
we wouldn't build...
So next leveling?
Yes, but you only want to be one level ahead of your opponent. That's the key.
Yeah.
So not next, just next level.
Yeah. Right. So this is what I'd like to get into before we talk about, like, the way to build gauntlets. Matt, we wouldn't build a gauntlet for a PPTQ, right?
No, certainly not.
But we might build a gauntlet for an RPTQ, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we would definitely build a gauntlet for a Pro Tour.
Yes.
So but why do each of those levels change how much we build the gauntlet?
I think that some amount of that is just due to... I mean, it has to do more with your goals more than it does have to do with, like, specifically, like, I don't think that necessarily everybody should not build a gauntlet for a PPTQ. I think that there are people that could benefit greatly from building a gauntlet for a PPTQ. I think that there was a point in my Magic career when I would build a gauntlet for a PPTQ.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that now. I'm going to see, that's to let you know how it goes.
So for me, the PPTQ level, I'm going to play the deck that I either know the best, the deck that is like that I feel like I'll have the best results with, or just the best deck in the format. Whereas with the RPTQ, I feel like my goal is to win one tournament, so I want to be the level one deck. Whereas at the Pro Tour, I could see myself being the level 1 or the level 2 deck. And we'll get to that in just a minute. And for me, I actually disagree a little bit. I think that at some level, you do want certain things at certain points.
But you're assuming that you necessarily need to go to those levels just because you built the gauntlet, right? Like, you could still play the best deck even if you build a gauntlet.
Oh, sure. If your gauntlet says the best deck is the best deck, you don't even need to go to level one, right?
Or even if you don't do that, like, even if you just build a gauntlet just to be able to be practiced against the decks that you expect to see, right? Like, you don't necessarily need... Like, the only purpose of the gauntlet isn't necessarily to decide what deck you should play. It's also to decide how to play against these decks.
Yeah. So yes. I think we're talking about two different things here, but I do actually think that both are absolutely correct. Because at some point, and this is actually a mistake that players make too, is that they build a gauntlet to see how good their deck is, but they don't build the gauntlet to see what the best deck is.
Or to see how to play against the decks, I think is also very important.
Exactly. And so these are very important things, and it's a very wide range. I think that people see things like the LSV Gauntlet videos that he did back in the day, and they're like, okay, so how I'm supposed to build my deck is I'm supposed to beat the best five decks, and if I can't do that, then my deck is bad, and they just go in a circle of trying to build decks. Whereas, what probably should have happened is they should probably just be playing a Thoughtseize Packrat deck in the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I've been caught in that trap. I played one Thoughtseize Packrat deck, well, two. I played black-white and black-green, and probably that entire format I should have been doing that. And so it's definitely not something that you can't be caught unaware of. It's definitely not something that, like, no one has the power over. Everyone can be caught making the mistake of not creating their gauntlet for the right reasons. So how do you start a gauntlet? Let's start, it's Pro Tour Return to Innistrad or whatever this format is called. How do you start, Matt?
So is the format going to be modern or is it going to be standard?
It's going to be standard, and Shadows Over Innistrad just came out.
Okay. So whenever I'm starting testing for a new standard format, I always want to build the mono red deck. Mono red is basically always going to be good, so I think that's a good place to start.
Or even if mono red isn't good, I might start with white weenie. I would like to throw that in there.
Yeah, I guess
a mono color aggressive deck.
Yeah, a little more vague. Be a mono color aggressive deck, exactly. And even if the deck's not good, people are going to
they're going to be on the same page.
It's going to be very easy to determine how to build one of these decks. So it's a great place to start in the format because a lot of other decks require a lot of finesse depending on what card you want to play, depending on metagame, things like that. These decks are very linear and don't really require you to need to know what your opponent is doing most of the time.
Yeah, and also, like, so for the Pro Tour, you're going to have some amount of information to go off of. And that's okay. Like, it's not wrong to go off of that information. The thing is what information are you taking and what's going on here? So I agree with Matt. So my starting point is always the aggro decks. Because, first of all, they're always good. Never has there ever – I don't believe that there's ever been a format other than the Thragtusk Delver format where aggro decks actually weren't good.
Well, it depends on if you were considering Mono Blue Devotion to be an aggro deck because Mono Blue Devotion actually – I understand that. But I'm saying like that deck actually did completely force aggro out of the format.
Sure, but to me that was an aggro deck,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It depends on if you consider Mono Blue Devotion to be an aggro deck.
Yeah, but – Let's take the Delver Thragtusk format, for example. So that format probably forced aggro out of the format. But outside of that, and maybe outside of Mono Blue Devotion, Matt has a great point there. Usually, like, some Mono Red, Mono White, something like that is going to be playable. Is that indicative of, like, where you should start, Manny?
Absolutely. So if you know... If A plus B equals C, then you're absolutely going to start there. Like, if there's always going to be some variant of a monocolored aggro deck at every Pro Tour from now until the end of time, then you should absolutely start there.
Awesome. So what's your next step? Should we talk about levels now, or should we develop this, Matt? What do you think?
I think we can develop this a little while first.
Okay, so what's next? So you've developed your mono red or your mono white, your green white, your aggro deck. Like, this is the aggro deck of the format. Whether it's even mono black, for example, we had the mono black blue black zombies deck for a little while that was like probably the best aggro deck, right? So it's not always mono red. It's not always mono white. Like, there's some kind of aggro deck that's going to be playable. Even like last year last year, it probably started out at mono black, and mono black never saw the light of day because it was still level zero, right?
Right.
So how did that happen? How did mono black go to the deck everyone started with to the deck that's unplayable?
I don't know.
Well, I think that the first step is developing other. I think that one of the first steps for me and for Quentin last year was actually developing other aggro decks. So hold on.
I'm confused. What are we talking about exactly? So we're talking about mono black devotion.
No, mono black aggro last year.
Okay.
So
we're saying how did it go from being the best deck to being unplayable like overnight?
Before week one. So as far as spoilers goes, before gauntlets were built for week one of the SCG Open, mono black was considered like the deck going into the SCG Open.
Sure.
But mono black didn't put up any results all of last year as far as the aggro deck goes.
Right.
So how did that happen, and how was that from people building gauntlets?
Well, so certain amounts of that can happen from there's a big difference between the way that cards are perceived and the way that they actually play out. Certainly the mono black deck wasn't as powerful as it was perceived to be. The other thing is that other cards were just way better than they were perceived to be, such as Siege Rhino, you know?
Siege Rhino is a great example of this.
Yeah, I know I personally underestimated that card, and it turns out that card invalidates a whole slew of strategies, such as mono black aggro, like a deck that's not quite fast enough to get under it, and a deck that's not big enough to beat it, right?
Right, and even Mantis Rider was great against that deck, right?
Right.
Like, when Mantis Rider was spoiled, I certainly didn't think it was playable, and for the first, like, month of that format, it might have been one of the best cards, and then in the first month and a half of this format, it's been one of the best cards. And so that's indicative of evaluating cards. So let's say that the start of building your gauntlet in a new format is evaluating cards. Now let's move on to you have results. Okay, Matt and Manny? So now we have week one results. So what does that do to create your gauntlet?
Well, starting there's going to be a huge shift in the meta. Now, everyone who has seen those results, because, I mean, they're common, everyone has the internet, I should hope, can look at those decks, decide that they want to play those decks, and how they want to play against those decks.
Matt, yep. What do you think? Is that...
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. I think that's pretty well put. Basically, once you have a Star City Games Open or a major event like that, you basically have an established format. Whether that format's going to shift is undetermined at that point, but you certainly have a basis of where everybody's going to be starting from.
All right, so the Star City event happens. It's week one. Week two, we probably have a standard GP. So people are going to do one of two things. They're going to play the decks that did well, that they felt like had the best win percentage upon their gauntlet based upon the SCG results. And then they're going to play... So that's what level zero is, right, Matt? That's
yes.
Where level zero begins. Explain level zero to people.
So level zero is just playing the best deck or the deck that is perceived to be the best.
Or decks,
yes. Yes, they are the yeah, I mean, you can certainly have more than one deck at that level. I mean, I know going into Pro Tour...
The last Pro Tour, it was green, white, and Jeskai, right?
Right.
Those were the two best decks.
Right, and at like you know, Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir, they had Abzan and Jeskai were perceived to be the best decks.
Right. So it can be multiple decks. It could also be one deck where it's like it's important to know, can you beat these decks or this deck? So that's the level zero. So in building your gauntlet, you need to know, you need to include level zero decks, because if you can't beat level zero and you're not on level 2, which we'll get into in a moment, there's actually no reason to play your deck, right, Matt?
Yeah, definitely.
So with that being said, what's level 1, Matt?
Level 1 is playing the decks that are going to beat the perceived best decks.
So let's say that we're back to Proto Origins. Green Red Devotion with Atarka, this is clearly the best deck. What are you doing to be the level 1 deck?
So we're talking about green red evasion with Dragon Lord Attacker, right? So we're trying to be the level one deck from there.
Yes.
So playing any kind of control deck is a good way to be on level one there, I believe.
Or blue white heroic. Both of those great strategies here. Right. Okay, so we've actually just already developed a gauntlet, right? So we know that Abzan is the best deck of the format overall. Green red devotion beats Abzan. And then control decks and blue white heroic beat that deck. So we've developed four decks now, right? So these four decks are decks that we expect at Pro Tour Origins. Now, how do we, is this our gauntlet going into the format, Manny?
Yes.
I think so. Would you agree, Matt?
Yes, absolutely.
So we've found four decks that are viable. Maybe we found more, because obviously there are things that are printed, like Exquisite Firecraft and Abbot of Carrotkeep, that might push Mono Red back into the format. We might now have five decks. So what happens here is we've developed, like, we know from information that we've gathered what we can expect to play against, and that brings into what level two is, Matt. And what is level two?
So level two is playing a deck that's specifically metagame to beat the decks that people are going to be playing to beat the best deck or the perceived best decks.
So the best deck at Pro Tour Origins, for example, and I use Pro Tour Origins because this is the format I've tested the most for, is Green Red Devotion. I personally did not find a deck that was good enough for against Green Red Devotion to not play Green Red Devotion other than Blue White Heroic, which I didn't think would be representative. So that's the deck that I played. But what happens is people find things, like Mono Red that they do believe has a good matchup because they're playing things like Exquisite. Instead of playing Green Red Atarka, which had a bad matchup against Green Red Devotion, they play Mono Red, which actually had a good matchup against Green Red Devotion. So things changed. So their gauntlet consisted of how do I beat Atarka Red, which won the last Pro Tour, Abzan, Control, Green Red Devotion, and Esper Dragons. That's how Gauntlet started. And then they move forward with their level 2 decks. What decks beat that? So what happened eventually is they came to this level 2 deck, which was easily the best deck of Pro Tour Origins, and probably was, like, never good again, and that is the Blue-Red Thopter deck. And that deck swept the Pro Tour. It was the greatest thing that ever happened at that Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like it was going to be, you know, the next Cobblade or whatever at Pro Tour.
Exactly, but it actually wasn't. It was a meta game dependent thing, which is what you want your gauntlet to be consistent of, right? Your gauntlet is built to win the tournament you're playing that gauntlet for, right, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you never need to win another match with that deck afterwards, right?
Right. So we now understand all of the levels of Magic. So, let's talk about two things and then let's build a gauntlet. So, let's talk about must-beat decks. So, where do you find the must-beat decks, Matt?
The must-beat decks are usually going to be found in the Star City Games Opens. The Open Series is pretty great, and it gives you a lot of information on what people are playing at the moment.
Manny, when you are looking at an event, and you're looking for decks to play, as someone who's a little bit newer to the game, do you actually just play Star City Games decks to try them out?
I do, yeah. So I do. I don't do it as much now, but when I very first started, part of trying to figure out what the metagame would be and how to play against these decks especially was to pilot them myself. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you're not cruising Star City Games decklist to check out who took 32nd place. You look at the top eight and you say, like, I'm looking at it right now, right? So we have 1, 2, 3 green white Megamorph and 3 Jeskai Black and 1 Jeskai Dragons. Okay. So obviously those are the two decks I want to try playing.
So Matt, what is your thought? Like, so you've created this environment from the Star City Games event. So you have to be able to beat the decks at the Star City level, right?
You have to either play a deck that can beat them, or if you can't find the deck that can beat them, then you should probably just be playing them.
Yeah, I think that's where we come into level zero. So, And that becomes to the next, my next point, which is the can't beat him, join him camp. And this happened a lot where I was wrong and Casey was wrong. We did a podcast for years where Casey and I just refused to play Pack Rat. And it was wrong. It was wrong. We should have just been playing Pack Rat for a year. Like, the Thossies, Matt, I think that you fell into this in camp, right? Like, you weren't playing Pack Rat either.
I didn't necessarily refuse to play. I didn't think that it was as good as it probably was. I played Pack Rat at a few tournaments, though.
Yeah. I played it at two, and I probably should have played it at more.
Right.
Yeah, you guys are insane. That card is my favorite card ever printed.
Well, you're a jerkhead.
Well, I don't really have any qualms with the deck specifically. It didn't feel powerful enough as, like...
As it was.
Yeah, it was certainly more powerful than it seemed, right?
It didn't feel like you were overwhelming your opponent with tokens.
Well, so I think some amount of it was the deck was...
You have to remember that you're in a format with Sphinx's Revelation and Nykthos.
And the deck... Sure. The deck actually attracted players that were less skilled sometimes. So when you'd see the deck in those players' hands, they would lose a lot with it. So you'd kind of like it makes the deck appear a lot worse. And then when you see a player like Owen Turtenwald play the deck, and you're like, "Wow, this deck is unbeatable."
When he's playing the black white version of the deck, I'm like, "I don't actually know what's better than this." And it's very indicative of like. He knew what was going on, and that's the thing, is that with building your gauntlet, you're going to know what's going on. So that's the you can't beat him, join him camp that Matt's talking about, where if you have a group of similar play skill players, and you play 1,000 games or 100 games, the most likely thing is actually 100. If you've got like around 6 people, 4 to 6 people, you can probably get 100 games in a playtesting session of like one day. Between that many people. And you can probably figure out what the best deck is and the can't beat them deck. So if you can't beat them, you probably should join them. That being said, let's pretend that you can beat them. And then let's pretend that you know what the must beat decks are. So let's create a gauntlet for this standard format for the listeners, Matt. What are the you must beat decks right now?
For what? Which format?
This standard format.
So for this standard format, the must beat decks are green white Megamorph, Jeskai Black, probably Abzan as well.
Yes, I think that those three fall into that category.
Right,
and I do think that Autarka combo also falls into that category.
Right. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So I think that those four are your starting points. So we don't know if we can beat them yet. But these are our starting points. So, Manny, so you have these four decks. You have the results of the last 2 weeks. So you probably are going to include green ramp decks at large. Because right. They're good against Abzan and Jeskai. For some reason, I don't know how they're good against Jeskai, but everybody says they are. So we're going to pretend that they are. Yeah. I haven't figured it out yet. We're going to pretend that it's actually... We're going to pretend that they are.
Sounds counterintuitive. I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to pretend that this green-red Autarka Eldrazi deck is actually as good as people say it is, and that Map the Waste is in fact a good card in the format. So Matt, we've found five decks that we want to beat. What is it that you're doing with these five decks, and how are you testing it, Matt?
Well, so the way that I personally would test is I first would like to find out how the four decks interact with each other.
Five
to find
decks.
Out if there are five decks, if there's one that's clearly beating the other four, then that's a pretty good signal as well.
So this is before you present another deck into this gauntlet against these decks.
Right, yeah. Before presenting, you know, whatever brews that I happen to be thinking of or anything, I would like to figure out how these decks work inside and out and at least play some games with them, even if I'm not figuring out, like, what their matchups are in every single, like... every single other matchup.
Even if you don't want to play Jeskai Black, you probably want to know how Jeskai Black plays.
Right.
Yeah, I'm of the same opinion. So I'm of the opinion of Matt, where I want to know how every deck plays. Oftentimes when Casey and Matt are playing against each other, or Matt's playing against somebody else, I'll be like, hey, can I jump in and just like play two games? The reason that I do that is because I want to know what this deck is like. Because the importance of the gauntlet is as much to know what the decks do against each other as it is to know what your deck can do in the field. the creating the gauntlet is done because you want to know what the five best or the four best decks are and how your deck does against them, so that going into your next tournament, you know what to do. But so level one of the gauntlet, as we can create here, is actually just knowing how the gauntlet goes against each other. What is the rock, paper, scissors of the format? How does it interact? So let's pretend that we have a great brew. Let's say that we have Spencer's deck, Matt. Let's say that we have this rug deck.
Okay.
So what is it that we want to get out of rug midrange going against these five decks?
Well, certainly we want positive win percentages against at very least the two most popular decks, and then reasonable matchups against the rest, hopefully better than that.
So is your level zero or your gauntlet always built off of the five most popular decks?
Yeah, I think that your gauntlet should basically be the most popular decks, even if you don't necessarily think that they are the best decks.
Any?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to do you any good to be testing against something that you've heard is fairly good, or something that may be kind of an outlier that you may not even see in a local tournament, or, you know, a larger tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly end up with inbred testing that way.
That was exactly the point I want to get into, is how does inbred testing happen, Matt? How does your gauntlet turn into inbred testing?
Inbred testing is when you basically tweak a deck. So let's say that, like, I'm really have my heart set on Abzan being the best deck. So I tweak it and define it in certain ways to be able to beat the deck that I'm playing against at that point in time. And then
And then you tweak it again to beat Mono Red.
Right, and then you tweak it again to beat Mono Red, and then you introduce a new deck into the gauntlet, and then that deck is, like, tuned and tweaked to beat this version of Abzan that you've concocted that has, like, no real place in the real world. And then you, like, start introducing new decks to try to beat this Mono Red deck, because the Mono Red deck is crushing your Abzan deck, and then that deck ends up being completely inbred to beat this Mono Red deck. For instance, when I first started playing Magic...
So you just end up playing, like, a bunch of not real, just nonsense.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
Matt, go ahead and explain.
So when I first started playing Magic, I was playing with one of my friends, and I was playing Blue-White Control, and he would play Mono Red, and the matchup is actually pretty reasonable anyway at this point in time. Like, this was when we had Wall of Omens and Baneslayer Angels and Path to Exiles and things like this, right? While the Mono Red deck was very good, it still didn't have a very good matchup against this Blue-White deck. But we played against each other so often, and I wanted to beat him so badly that I ended up with, like, an almost 15-card sideboard for that matchup and almost nothing else. Like, I ended up with a sideboard that contained, like, multiple Wall of Denials, which are good against nothing else, and, like, multiple Core Firewalkers and Lone Missionaries and all kinds of stuff.
So, would you say the similar thing happened with me and Primeval Titan decks against you playing Splinter Twin?
Yeah, I think that you had a lot more cards than the average player against Splinter Twin, even despite me being the only one in the entire Valley that was playing Splinter Twin at the time.
Right, like, and it's because, like, the only deck I'm losing to is Matt Kling playing Splinter Twin. I want to beat him. And that is how inbred testing happens.
And that So just for the record, that actually can certainly be fine for a local tournament, but just don't try to take the same sideboard with you when you go to a major event.
Exactly. I completely agree. The thing is that your gauntlet, when you're building your gauntlet, we found in just our conversation, if we were to pick five decks right now, I do believe they would be green ramp decks, whatever you want to test against. I don't know that it matters. You probably should play against Green Red because of the last 2 weeks. Jeskai Black, probably the Owen Turtwell, John Finkel version, because that's going to be the most popular. Green Red Atarka with the combo. Abzan at large, you should probably just be able to beat an Abzan deck. And then Green White Megamorph. Like, these are decks that, like, you need to know what you're doing against. Whether or not you have great matchup against them, the point of the gauntlet is not to break the format. That's what people think the point of the gauntlet is for. The point of the gauntlet is actually just to know what you're doing, right, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
you should at the very least know how to play against all of these decks.
Yeah. Whether or not you have a good matchup, if you're going to play a deck, you should know what you're doing in the matchup. That's not the same thing.
Right. And if you've never played against Jeskai Black and you're sitting down and you're not aware the deck plays Crackling Doom, it could put you in a bad spot.
I've been in that spot. In the finals of a PTQ, even. Where I'm sitting across from my opponent with a 10-10 Desecration Demon that I have completely locked down, and then turns out he's playing Disciple of Bolas.
Matt, you actually denied to play against that deck in testing, right? It was not in your gauntlet because you didn't believe it was your deck.
Right, yeah, absolutely, yeah. We had seen the deck, and Casey and I collectively decided that it wasn't worth testing against because the deck looked and was actually awful, but...
Saying that it won multiple PTQs, top 8 did multiple SCGs.
I don't know that it did top 8 any SCGs, but maybe one or two, but...
That being said, the point of the gauntlet was, in fact, to know what you were doing, right?
Right, yeah,
absolutely. If you had known what you were doing against Black-Green Desecration Disciple, you would have known that, like, that thing needs to go and you need to cast this...
The Blasphemous Act, yeah, absolutely.
The Blasphemous Act, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I had already put in so much work into knowing how to play this deck. There's no reason for me to have not spent the other, you know, 25 minutes or whatever testing a few games of this matchup, because that's all it would have really taken.
So, let's wrap this up. So, with all of the things we've said, it's clearly split things, gone in multiple tangents here. Matt, how do you build a gauntlet?
So, yeah, step one is figuring out what decks are the level zero decks, as it were. The decks that you need to know how to beat. And that is what most of your gauntlet should be comprised of.
And then Manny, what's next? You know what the best decks are. What are you doing next?
So next, you want to find the level 1 decks, the decks that beat those decks.
So how do you find those, Matt? How do you find out what beats these best decks?
Some amount of it's going to be certainly trial and error. But the best way is honestly to start out by playing these best decks and... See if you can't find out where you're struggling, what cards you're struggling to beat, and what cards, find out what weaknesses that your deck has when you're playing it, and then try to exploit them from the opponent's perspective.
Okay, so for those who don't actually have the time that some of us have, you, myself, and Manny, we probably dedicate more to Magic than the average Magic player. Like, Matt, you probably dedicate more than me and Manny, but, like, me and Manny probably still dedicate more time than any average Magic player to, like, getting better at Magic. What do you recommend to those players, Matt, to still gain an edge, even if they can't play as much Magic as we do?
I would say that you should listen to Constructed Criticism, because they have a pretty great podcast that'll tell you a lot about how to play.
Also, I heard signing up for the Patreon makes you better, too.
I don't think that necessarily is true. I do think that, like, I do think that there are things that you can do. Data is really important.
Yeah,
and I think that constructive criticism breaks down that for you.
That's kind of what I'm getting at, really. I know I'm, like, you know, trying to make a joke there. But realistically, like, even if you don't have very much time, you can still look at an SCG open top 8. You can still, you know, listen to a podcast on your way to work, read an article at some point, you know. There are certainly the tools out there for you to find out what the metagame should be represented by.
Yeah. Manny, how do you approach it? Like, you probably play less Magic than me and Matt. What do you do to get ready for a tournament that, I mean, for example, like, you probably didn't play almost any Magic before your PTQ first top 8.
Actually, yeah, it's funny that you say that. I did not.
Yeah.
I ran into you at Oasis. And you said, come play this PPTQ, and I said, okay. I bought a standard deck right there on the spot. I took it, and I top 8-ed.
But you probably didn't do no testing before the event, right?
Little to no. Maybe I played a couple of games.
Oh.
Well, so what I did, though, I can tell you what I did going into it, because I wasn't new to Magic by any point, you know, by any means. What I did was, as I researched, you know, the SCG top 8, I found something. I think I ended up playing Bant Heroic. You know, I was like, oh, it's a combo deck. I understand how to do it. I'm going to have very little interaction with my opponent. And as long as my play is solid and I understand my deck, I'll have a better chance of winning than if I play any of these other decks.
Yeah. So you used the information that was available to you, even if you weren't building that gauntlet. And yeah. And that's what the gauntlet is actually for. The gauntlet is for information. It's not for, it's not really for breaking the format, which is what people think it's for. And that's what I wanted to get into in this podcast. Is that in the end, everything is about how you utilize information. And the gauntlet is just to give you the best information possible going to into each individual event. If you happen to break the format, that's great. You're ahead of the metagame, and that's fantastic. But what you really want from it is just to know what's going on, right, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's not something that you can gain more from knowledge. I mean, like, knowledge is power, and in the end, like we've said since episode 3 or something, knowing is half the battle. And building that gauntlet and knowing what you're doing going into each format is going to be how you're going to gain that information. So even if all you can do is one match against every deck, at least you have some information.
Yep. At least, I mean, or at least just look at deck lists to see what they're playing.
Yeah, there's always something you can do to gain that information. And knowing what the gauntlet should be is step one. Whether you play against it or not, there's always things you can be doing to improve. And like Manny said, his first PPTQ top 8 was actually like, he played zero Magic, but he knew what people were playing before he went into the event. And that was from creating a gauntlet in his head, knowing what he needed to beat going into that event.
And I mean, I think to some extent, we're going to assume that anybody that's listening to this podcast is somebody that's trying to get better at Magic and somebody that is going to dedicate, you know, at least some part of their time as much as they can to improving at Magic.
Yeah, I would assume so too. I think that if you're listening to this podcast, it's because you want to get better at Constructed Magic. Right. And the gauntlet is a big part of that. So
the only thing that I would like to add to this is that you just want to make sure that you know what level you need to be at for what event you want to be at. Because if you're on level 2 and everybody at the tournament you're
is on level 0,
you're going to have a bad time. So, yeah, just make sure that you know what kind of a tournament you're preparing for. Like, if you're preparing for a PPTQ or anything like that, people aren't gonna do a lot of metagaming, so there's really no reason to be on level two. Metagame. Yeah, there's no reason to be on level 2 for something like that.
Yeah, I think that it was really funny. On the way home from the RPTQ this weekend, I explained level 1, level 2 to the people I was driving with. They were very interested by it, and I was like, well, to be honest, like, you and I, like, at the PPTQ level, we don't really need to worry about this. It's not something we need to worry about. It's something we need to be aware of. Like, let's say that we're, instead of going to a PPTQ, we're going to an SEG Invitational. That's where people make their money doing the level 1 and 2 thing.
Right.
Like, that's actually, like, money in the bank.
Yeah.
If you can do that. Brad Nelson and Tom Ross.
Yeah.
Jerry Thompson, they've made a living off of doing this.
I think you need to be at least at an SCG Invitational, though, to actually need to be on level 2, though.
Right. You know, I completely agree. But it all starts with how you build your gauntlet and what you're looking for out of each event.
Yep.
And that's what Matt and I and Manny are trying to push home to you, is start with level 0 before you ever try and do anything else. Don't make your gauntlet level 1 decks. Because that's how inbred testing happens.
Right.
So, all right, let's end this. I hope that if you have any questions, leave them in the comment section, constructivecriticism.com. We'd be happy to answer them for you on the next podcast, kind of talk about it. This was a very in-depth training grounds. Actually went deeper than I thought it would, but that's good. That means that there could be questions, and we're happy to answer them for you if we have them for you. But let's go into the clan. So, the best way to join the clan on MTGO for Constructive Criticism is to mention me if I'm online. It's going to be a Monday if I'm online. Or Quentin. Quentin is at Earthstripe. That's U-R... Let's just look this up.
It's U-R-T-H-S-T-R-Y-P-E.
Go, Matt Kling. or me, Spencer13Dev. I'm usually only on Mondays right now. For example, I'll be drafting tomorrow on Monday, sometime during the day. Message me. I'll add you to the clan. If Quentin is online a lot more than me, he has access to my account. He will also add you to the clan. One day there will be clan events, so it will be good to be on the clan if you can. Sponsor. Don't forget to check out Oasis Games. You can check them out at OasisGamesSLC.com, OasisCCG.com, and then MTGOasis.com. There's lots of ways to get to the site. Great prices, great cards, and it's just a great way to support the podcast. So, if you are into buying Magic cards for some reason, you can always support them at the podcast directly at patreon.com/ccmtg. Honestly, the amount of work that I put into the podcast, I hope that you feel like what you're getting is worth something. Starting at $1 all the way to whatever you want to pay. Everything is appreciated. We keep the podcast free because we want to improve the Magic community. It's not a matter of what we say is worth something, so pay us. It's a matter of we want to make you better at Magic, and that's the primary goal. And if you can afford it, please help us.
It's also important to note that, like, this money's not even, like, it's not even like we're just being greedy and putting this money into our pockets. Like, it's money that's going towards things that are going to benefit you guys, like better sound equipment, tokens, and things of that nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, a lot of money went into other things that are now gone, and so we've kind of had to adjust. And that's okay. Like, things happen, life happens, and in the end, like, the laptop that I'm currently recording this podcast on is probably going to be Manny's in about, like, 2 months.
Woo!
From Patreon money. So that's important to note. Like the things that happen here are Manny gets his own recording device, which it actually does improve the podcast. And that's important, is that we are, in fact, a self-sufficient business. Like, The things that you guys are doing now, I don't have to worry about improving sound equipment. Like, Matt and Manny can buy their own headsets. That's fine. The thing is that what I want to do is increase content. Somebody made a suggestion to us about, like, hey, you know what you guys should do? You should bring back Card of the Week and then give the Card of the Week to a Patreon. That's great, but if the Card of the Week is Jace, I have to pay $80 for a Jace and give it to a listener, and I'm making $120 a month. So let's say that it's Jace, and then it's something else, and then it's something else, and something else. That's more than I'm making from the podcast. I would 1,000% to love to give a Jace out to the listeners. I would do that in a heartbeat. Unfortunately, unlike Marshall, I'm not making $10,000 a year from my podcast.
Right. So, I mean, we could do Card of the Week parentheses under $10.
So, no,
defies the point of the Card of the Week.
Right. I've thought of Card of the Month. I've thought of all kinds of things to incorporate with this fan who gave this fantastic suggestion about, right?
It's really good. Yeah,
no,
I like
it's a
lot.
Great suggestion. The thing is that I can't do that kind of stuff at $120 a month. I need to pay for upgrades to equipment. I need to pay for streaming equipment. I need to pay for, the website. I need to do all kinds of things. And I'm not begging for money. Like, the podcast is already self-sufficient.
I think what you're getting at is that you're running this, you know, we're a small business. We're trying to help the Magic community. And we're an American business broadcasting to American listeners.
Right.
And they can support America by supporting us.
So, to be fair, a lot of our listeners come from Australia and Europe.
Oh, shoot.
So I do appreciate you guys, and we do have people in Europe actually on the Patreon, so thank you so much. But I want what Matt says to be reiterated. Like, I'm not putting the money into my own pocket. Matt and Manny, they own 0% of this quote-unquote business. At this point, with Casey gone and Quentin gone, I own 100% of Constructive Criticism.
Yeah. I do this for peanuts, you guys. I want to get better at Magic with everybody.
That's that's something that we appreciate. But I still want to equip Matt and Manny with things that they need to be successful in the podcast. So everything that you can do for the Patreon is appreciated, but it's not required. I understand that a lot of you are college students. A lot of you don't have the money to give us $10 a month, and that's okay. We don't require it. We're always going to be free. We just appreciate everything you can do. So with that being said, where can people find you if they just want to talk to you, Matt?
You can find me on Twitter at The Witch Kling. You can find me on Facebook at Matthew Kling. And those are pretty much the good ways to find me. Mostly Twitter. If you message me on Twitter, I will definitely respond to you.
Yeah, and I think Matt is like literally one person behind 100 followers.
No, I have more than 100 followers.
All right, do you?
Yeah, I've had more than 100 followers for a while.
I thought you were literally 99. Matt Kling is at 100.
I'm at 100 right now.
Right now.
Yeah, apparently I've lost a few followers, so I'm sorry for whatever I did, guys.
Jaren, who is a great, great podcast listener, Matt has been at 100 since he came, at 99 since he came back. Jaren just followed him in the last probably 3 days. I check Matt Kling's followers to find out when he hits 100 all the time. So Jaren, shout out to you.
Obviously you.
Yeah. Hey, I'm a creeper, don't worry about it.
I would also like to give a shout out for Jaren since it's actually benefiting me, and yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, so Twitter's the best way to get a hold of you, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you, Manny? How can people get a hold of you?
Same thing, Twitter. My handle there is ENTRPNRFRESH, Entrepreneur Fresh. I always tweet back. I'm always on Twitter. I love it. It's my favorite.
You can add me on Facebook, Spencer Stephen Howland. Don't add Spencer Howland. You won't get the ad. So Spencer Stephen is a little bit better. Twitter, Spencer13H, MDGO, Spencer13Dev. If you ever find a Spencer13H, Cockatrice, Pokemon, whatever you're looking at, it's probably me. I even own Spencer13H on like Yahoo and Google. Like it's me. But yeah, that's the best way to get a hold of me. So, what's up next on the show notes, guys?
The show notes. We've got stream to be determined. Shout outs and hashtag with that.
So
be good.
So the stream. So I want to talk about this because we were doing a stream every week. So I want to keep bringing it home. The stream is currently canceled. There is currently a Patreon goal. So if you go to patreon.com/CCMTG, you will see that we have a new goal for the stream. The reason for the new goal instead of the goal we had is that there was in fact money spent to create the streaming software. It could happen before the new goal. I don't want to pretend that the new goal is like the only way to get the streaming software and the only way that like the stream continues. But currently the stream would be created only by me. And I don't actually have a computer that, like, is very good at streaming MTGO. But that being said, like, with the Oasis game sponsorship and things like that, if we meet the other Patreon goal, there's a great possibility that, like, Matt and I could actually record live videos, so, like, a Versus-style series, at the goal of $200 per month, which we're only $70 away a month from hitting, to, like, maybe Matt and I do, like, a Versus video every week. And Matt would love that, by the way. If there's anything Matt would love, it would be, like, actual live Magic recording.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be a fan of the Moto streaming as well. And honestly, actually, probably... Spencer, we could probably talk about something about that at some other point.
Yeah, I'm sure we could. Like, I'm sure we could work something out. But I want to be, like, clear why it's not happening. Because we had previously hit the goal, but, like... Like we said, money is a thing, and like money was spent for certain things that is no longer available to us. So I don't want to like pretend to the listeners that it wasn't a thing before. We know that you're missing it. We know that like we got over 200 viewers per stream for 2 weeks in a row. So we know that you guys like it, and we want to bring it back. So don't think that we've forgotten about you. Video content is important to us, and we will bring it back. But let's go to shoutouts. I never go first. I'm going first this week, if that's okay with everybody.
That's fine.
First of all, I want to give a shout out to Ryan, who drove to the RPTU with us this week. This was literally one of the best Magic trips I've ever had this weekend. And Ryan was awesome. Very cordial. Like, met the guy, like, literally, like, the week before we, the, like, 3 days before we went, It was awesome. I had a terrible judge call where I don't actually know the judge call was terrible as much as, like, the fact that the judge call had been reversed. A reverse ruling had been ruled against me at a previous PTQ. And I just want to give a shout-out to Roberto Gonzalez. He's taking ninth at a Pro Tour. He's the MTG Focus host. Really cool guy. Been friends with him since, like, GP Albuquerque way back in the day. Very good friends with Jonathan Jobe, one of Matt and mine friends. And, you know, he called, like, he saw what happened. He called the judge. And there are times where, like, things go bad in judge calls. And I feel like Roberto and I made the judge call go very well. We both presented stories. Myself, my opponent, and Roberto, who witnessed it, all gave the same story to the judge. And I feel like it did make the judge ruling the best that it could be. And I just want to give a shout out to Roberto for, like, paying attention to matches around him, calling judges when it was appropriate, and helping the game state of Magic be the best that it could be. So that's important to me. Casey Bloodworth. So Casey quit Magic a few months ago, as you all of you know from, like, listening to the podcast. He quit around episode 109. He stopped playing Magic. It's episode 110. I believe he played, like, his first tournament of Magic outside of Modo last week on Wednesday. And actually, in his match against Manny Marez, one of the co-hosts of the podcast, he actually, like, played some of the best Magic I've ever seen Casey play. And I just want to give Casey a shout-out for that.
Just punished me. It was the worst, like, seven-minute match of my life.
Yeah. In that 7 minutes, he probably made, like, 1,000 decisions and all of them being correct. I watched the match from Casey's side 100% of the time, and it was amazing to watch him, like, navigate that field and what was happening. I was very impressed with him, so shout-out to Casey. The other shout-out that I want to give is to Austin Geltz. He qualified for his first Pro Tour this weekend. The entire weekend, Austin was worried about his own play, wanted to talk to Matt and myself about his sideboard and things like that, rather than, like, focusing on what he was doing right. And I just want to give Austin a shout-out for, like, doing what he needed to do to win the event. No matter what event you play in, whether you're John Finkel, Owen Turnwald, or Joe Schmo, you're going to make mistakes. And that's okay. In the end, like, our goal on this podcast is always to teach perfect play and to, like, always evaluate what you're doing wrong. But Austin did what he needed to do to win an event to qualify for the Pro Tour, and I just want to give him credit for that. He's been a listener of this podcast for a while. He watched every stream Quentin and I ever did. He is done everything he can in the last year to improve. And I just want to let him know that I am very proud of him. So I wanted to give him a shout-out. Matt, go ahead. What are your shout-outs this week?
So I want to give a shout-out and an anti-shout-out to Austin Geltz. I want to give him a shout-out for qualifying for the Pro Tour. He really did a fantastic job, and I think that he's really come a long way as a Magic player. And then I want to give him an anti-shout-out for letting us and everybody else call him Austin Geltz for, like, 2 or 3 years. It's probably been longer than that, and he's never corrected anybody, so...
Never once. Never once has he told me his name was not Austin Geltz. I had to find out because he told Casey that his name was not Austin Geltz after Casey asked him. It's Geltz, and, like, we've literally been calling him the wrong name for 3 years.
Yeah.
I agree. Anti-shout to Austin. Any other shout-outs, Matt?
No, that's all I got this week.
Manny, go ahead.
Yeah, my shout-out is to my girlfriend, Nicole. Thank you for sitting on the couch quietly and not moving for the last 2 hours. I appreciate it. And also shush. Shush.
I also, tell Nicole that I love her. She's, like, actually one of my favorite people.
Nicole! Spencer says he loves you! Okay, she might be asleep. I don't know.
No wonder she's been quiet. Alright.
I'm done.
Hashtag, would that be good? So what day is it? It's like the 1st of November, so we need to go back to the 22nd?
No, because we recorded on the 25th.
I don't think so, because...
No, we definitely did. It was the 25th.
Yeah.
The 25th? I don't feel like we read Eric's tweet,
no,
but... Alright. Alright. Alright, I recognize Manny's last tweet of that day, so I accept. So we'll start with Joel. Joel is like one of our great patrons. He has also been involved in like basically every Google Hangout. Great guy. He says, took down game day with Gabriel Nisi's deck. Another Liliana short of one. Bloodstain Meyer, hashtag would it be good. Also, Gabriel Nisi responded to this, saying that he also had included a second Liliana. So, first of all, shout out to Joel for next leveling Gabe Nassif. Second of all, what do you guys think of this this green-black sacrifice deck, Matt? Like, this isn't your wheelhouse. It's even Jund. So, technically, it does play red. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this deck looks pretty good. The only problem that I have with this deck is that I feel like it's probably unreliable to, like, have the sacrifice outlet all the time, just because there are only four Nantuka Husks for actual sacrifice outlets.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, I do think that Wizards is developing the metagame to want... I mean, they printed Azul Cutthroat knowing they wanted this deck to exist.
Well, I mean, I actually have another theory about that, because we're about to go into, like, Return to Innistrad, right? So, like... it pretty easily could, like, return, like, Morbid and things like that.
Sure. But I think that they didn't print Nantuku Husk not knowing they were printing...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was intended that these things would synergize.
Yeah. So and even the 4-drop in his deck, the Abomination, right. The 4-3, I think that they do want this deck to exist. I wonder if Collected Company, things like that, think tutors like that, they get better with more cards. So, first of all, congratulations on winning game day. Second of all, like, keep going on things like this. Always be trying to improve your deck. Do things you can to make the deck the best possible. Obviously, like, your Collected Companies into Husk, Horror Specs is going to be your best. But always do what you can to look at it, like, Catacomb Sifter, for example, was a card that, like, during set review, only I had playable. Quentin did not. So keep an eye out for things like that. When the next
is that really true?
Yeah.
Wow, that card looks bonkers on the surface. I'm surprised that he would say that. It's like a 3-4 for 3 that, like, also makes a mana.
Dude, it's hard to evaluate cards. But anyway, like... always do what you can, Joel, to, like, keep an open mind like this. I would never find a deck like this, so you should be proud for, like, paying attention to what others are doing and, like, keeping an open mind. So, yeah, I do think that that would be good. Manny says 51-point life swing, hashtag would be good, hashtag Abzan Retreat, hashtag MTG. You've got hashtag humble brag there.
It was a really good one.
Manny, do you love this deck?
I do. I really do. It's so fun. When you win with so much style. There's, like, not a question in your opponent's mind that they just got crushed.
All right. Let's go on to Matt's tweet. He says, what if Doctor Who's real name translated to English is Pepper? Hashtag mind blown. Hashtag would that be good? Hashtag, what is that last thing?
Paradigm shifting without the clutch.
So I don't actually watch
that,
Doctor Who.
That is actually one of the best hashtags I've ever seen. Paradigm shifting without the clutch.
So time out. I don't watch Doctor Who specifically because the first available Doctor Who episode on Netflix is the worst thing I've ever watched. So I can't actually get past it.
The first season of Doctor Who?
I think it's like the 7th season.
Oh, I was going to say, because I started watching Doctor Who from the beginning not that long ago, and I actually thought it was awesome.
That
can't be true. Doctor Who started, like, forever ago, even the season that Netflix is available for.
I don't know if I was watching it on Netflix, though. I could have been watching it on something else.
Huh.
But I know that I was watching season one.
Did it look like it was filmed in the 60s, 70s?
Yeah. It was like they were getting attacked by some kind of crazy, I don't know, something that invaded the Earth, and then she found it. Yeah, she, like, ends up traveling off with him or whatever. I don't remember how it goes exactly, but I know it was episode one.
Okay. So, like, the one that's available on Netflix started in 2005. But I believe that there were episodes before that. Honestly, like, I don't have an opinion of Doctor Who, but it sounds like these two do, so it could be good.
I mean, realistically, the tweet is not about Doctor Who, it's about a play on words anyway.
Oh, what is it about?
If his name was Dr. Pepper.
That would be pretty great. Yeah. good picking that up, Matt. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Standard's metagame becoming so inbred that Aldrazi rant becomes survivable. Hashtag with good. I actually believe that is happening. Like, Owen Turtwald and myself both believe that is happening. I do believe that green red Eldrazi is in fact a viable deck right now, and I do believe it should be in your gauntlet.
I think Owen Turtwald is very rarely wrong, but I hope you guys are wrong.
I don't think so. Like, I think that like the metagame is so focused on Abzan, which I don't actually believe is that good right now, and Jeskai Black, that like if you can just build a deck to beat that too, you have a good matchup. Matt?
Sorry, what was the question?
What do you think of Eldrazi ramp becoming viable in this format?
I mean, I think we're already there, right? Like, if we just look at the last...
Yeah,
It was like more than half of the top eight.
There were four green ramp decks in the top eight of the last SCG.
Yeah, so we're there at this point. We're in the future.
The future is now!
Exactly.
You mean in the, is it the last IQ?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the super IQ, on the 20th.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, I tweeted about it today. Pay attention, Manny. First 3-0 BFC, while playing Magic Online, hashtag would it be good. This is like a multicolor, ally deck. Honestly, like, this is meant for LTO, man. Like, tweet at us. But yeah, congratulations. That would be good if you like.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the topic, which is that you 3-0'd your draft, yes, that would be good.
Yeah, congratulations, Matt. Rogers says at Manapool, which is Chewy, in case anyone's wondering. Hashtag would be good. Do you think that the Eldrazi ramp decks would play a Crater Claws or somewhere, right? Actually, yeah. So like, couldn't they just kill people with Crater Claws?
Maybe. I think it's a bit of a stretch. You're not dealing a lot of damage in the early game with these decks. So, like, basically, like, it seems like your first play is either, like, Ulamog or Ugin or something like that. Your first impactful play. So I would say that Crater's Claw gets a lot worse in that scenario. And also, like, Ugin doesn't actually trigger Crater's Claws. And,
yeah, so like, the important thing to notice here is, like, things that, like, for example... Ali on Trozzi's deck was playing was like Whisperwind Elemental, where you might actually want Crater's Claws, right? Like if you're playing Call of the Scion into that, Crater's Claws becomes good because it comes a shock plus a lightning strike plus a fireball plus two. And that's good. Whereas these green red Eldrazi decks, like Matt says, they're not actually making an impactful play until they either wipe your board or they play a big threat, which basically wipes your board because Ulamog kills two guys.
Yeah, right? I'm looking at this mono green ramp deck, and I hate it more than anything I've ever seen in my whole life.
And it's also important to note that these decks are actually very light on creatures just in general, so you're not going to turn the Ferocious on Crater's Claw like very often until the game's already over anyway.
And obviously, with the last 2 weeks being Legacy and Modern, we will, in fact, encompass all of Standard next week, so stay tuned. Anything you guys want to say before we go? That's all the hashtag would that be good we got.
That's all I have for this week.
Yeah, that's all I've got, too.
All right, well, I just want to let you guys know, don't forget you can follow the podcast at CCMTG, and don't forget you can check out the podcast every week on iTunes. Just search either Oasis Games or Constructive Criticism. Both of them have an iTunes feed. Subscribe. Leave a review. Let us know what you think. And, make this podcast as awesome as we feel like it is. Shout out to Manny and Matt for coming on with me again this week. And, Matt, when is Seattle for you, man?
Seattle's going to be this weekend. Leaving on Friday evening, so. So hopefully, if there's any fans in Seattle that want to come up and talk to me, feel free. I'm always happy to talk with the fans.
So. Yeah, so if the podcast changes next week, You know, it could be that we record on a Monday. It could be that Matt's not on the episode because he's, like, top any good GP. Like, just want to let you guys know about that. So, good luck to Matt this weekend, and we'll see you all next week.
Yep. See you guys.
See you guys.
Magic, magic, magic.